The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 134, a presentation and production of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, is Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moines in the brand new studio.
Woohoo!
Yay!
It's done, finally. The long national nightmare is over.
Now, refresh our memory. What do you call the room now? What is it?
The Nerditorium?
The Nerditorium.
It's the Nerditorium studio.
Do you want to give an audio explanation to your setup there? You guys obviously sound different because you're on like actual real microphones through a mixer and all that kind of stuff. But do you want to set explain the rest of it to us?
Yeah, we've got a mixing board that is USB ready. So it plugs into the computer. And we've got two individual microphones that are on what are called scissor arm stands. So they're easily adjustable. And we've got my dual monitors facing me and Anessa's Mac facing her.
With Christmas lights.
Yes, she has USB Christmas lights on her computer, and it's adorable, let me tell you.
So this will get even more people to watch the video version of the podcast by going to youtube.com/galacticnetcasts.
People can watch me crochet because that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, that's been a thing for the past, I don't know, 10 or so episodes. You've been crocheting?
Yeah, well, because I was working on the blankets for my parents. And then this morning, we were watching stuff on Hulu, and I was like, I'll be right back. And I got some yarn and a hook, and now I'm crocheting. I just felt the need to crochet,
And I was home today because I felt like somebody had punched me in the guts. So, and I was sick yesterday afternoon. So I'm getting better.
Well, it gave you the opportunity to finish the studio.
Yeah, well, it didn't take that long, thankfully. So.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the podcast where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. And we've been doing this for the past 30 years and still going strong.
30 years.
The show is divided into three sections: the news, the craft corner, our spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and our picks for the week. If you ever want to watch us do the show and see Brad and Nessa's fancy pants studio, check it out at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts and watch the video version of the show. So let's get the show on the road and kick things off with the news.
In the news.
And Anessa, you're up with my favorite story of the week, so go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure how to say his last name. Tom DeLonge?
That's how DeLonge? I've always said it.
Tom DeLonge of Blink-182, you know, the crazy one, has apparently had enough of discussing his role in the recent breakup of Blink-182, so he recently unleashed the news that he had an extraterrestrial experience while camping near Area 51 in Nevada. And that since the occurrence, his phone has been tapped by the government. If you look at the vocalist's interview with Paper Mag recently, you'll see that he's been studying this stuff for a long time. And I think he actually has a website. I forget what it's called, but it's all about UFOs and
well, he
whatnot.
Did, he did an album with a UFO or alien theme, I believe. Like a solo album, I think.
Oh, probably. Or, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But while I was reading this article, I happened upon another article that talks about other musicians who have had similar experiences. And I'm going to mention some of those artists. So first up on the list, besides Tom, we've got Elvis Presley, who was a huge fanboy, frequently studying the extraterrestrial, paranormal, and other mysterious subjects throughout his life. He claimed that he had an experience with aliens around the age of 8 and that the visitors showed him the image of a man in a white jumpsuit singing to a huge crowd. Although he didn't understand what the image meant at the time. But yeah, I'm sure he came to figure out that it was him from the future. More stories came about Presley's extraterrestrial experiences after his death, although most were from the mouth of his hairstylist, Larry Geller. The friend of the king claimed that the vocalist's father, Vernon Presley, confirmed that a, quote, blue light had appeared over Tupelo, Mississippi when the star was born, and that later, when Presley and Geller were walking around Graceland, they saw a series of similar blue lights appear in the sky.
You know, he may have been one of those people that gets abducted over and over again throughout their entire life.
He could have been. And, you know, that kind of goes along with people that think that Elvis isn't dead. I mean, maybe he's hanging out with a bunch of UFOs on another planet. Maybe he's on Hondo.
With all the other dead rock stars, they all go to the same planet. They're all not dead.
Do we know the name of the planet that the rock stars go to when they die?
No.
Aw.
If somebody has a suggestion for it, I'm all ears.
Well, maybe David Bowie does, and he's next on the list. So, he claims that he encountered aliens as a youth, claiming that he and his friends saw UFOs so frequently that they could time them as to when they would show up. Perhaps this inspired the whole Ziggy Stardust phase, where the vocalist cast himself as a music star from space.
Or maybe it was just lights going on top of a building or a tower at a certain time of the day.
I was thinking, or maybe if he was near an airport and you had some regular flights departing or coming in, especially at a certain angle there for a while, it kind of looks like they're not really moving or not moving much. So you never know.
You know, I think we've got the perfect combination of skepticism and believing in aliens. Because, I mean, I mentioned, you know, the people that get abducted throughout their entire lives, which I believe. But then at the same time, you have to take things like this with a grain of salt and go, you know, maybe it was lights from an airport.
Yeah, it's, you can't believe everything. You got to think about it.
Exactly.
Give it some thought.
All right, go on.
All right, next on the list, we have John Lennon. The former Beatle has referenced UFOs frequently during his music. And then it says, check out the tracks Out of the Blue and Nobody Told Me. And he's been confirmed as an actual target of U.S. government phone tapping. So it's inevitable that he has had an actual experience with visitors. Confirmation came not from the performer himself, however, but from his assistant, May Pang. She claims that during 1974, he called her suddenly from the porch of his New York apartment. When she came, she saw a flattened cone with the brilliant light on top, which sounds to us vaguely like a Star Wars Imperial Destroyer. On the other hand, at least her tail was sexy. Lennon was reportedly nude as he stood on his porch.
All right.
Because that's important.
He was probably tripping balls.
Probably. That would be my guess, but I don't know. And then we have Sammy Hagar. The rock vocalist told the world of his experiences with aliens during his memoir/biography, Red, My Uncensored Life in Rock. He claims that while he was living in California, prior to joining Van Halen, he was visited by extraterrestrials while he was dreaming. He didn't understand the terminology at the time, but he reports that faceless visitors, quote, downloaded something to or from his brain. Although it was pointed out that this happened in a dream, he firmly confirmed that it friggin' happened, stating that he would have written much more on the subject, but his writer, Brian Felder, talked him out of it. Whether he has any experience with pod people has not been addressed. So, anyway. And then last on the list, we have Robbie Williams. There seems to be a significant number of British performers who claim to have been in touch with visitors from space. Then again, they've always claimed to be the chosen race. So, anyway. Robbie Williams of Take That in solo fame believes he was visited not twice, but three times. One particularly interesting encounter seems to have happened in reverse. The vocalist wrote a song about an abduction titled Arizona, and then as soon as he put down his pen, he was witness to a tremendous light. He's since claimed during interviews that he's considering quitting the whole music thing and taking part in researching the outer limits full time. This has yet to come to fruition, however. So, yeah. And another name that was mentioned in the article was Olivia Newton-John. okay. is another one that's into the aliens, but it didn't really mention much about her experience or anything. So,
do you think that Olivia Newton-John's experience with aliens was a physical one?
It's totally physical. Physical.
Perhaps they took her to Xanadu.
Maybe.
So I looked at a different article on Tom DeLonge. It's from Billboard, and they kind of break down all the things that we learned from his interview with this other website. And you mentioned that he had the experience at Area 51, right?
Right.
Okay. So apparently he went to Area 51 to try to see something or get in or something like that.
As you do.
Yep. Of course. He thinks humans have already been in contact with extraterrestrials. He claims he was warned not to get out of his car at Area 51. What else? He thinks there are fossilized remains of life on Mars, and he thinks we really landed on the moon and that conspiracy theories are actually planted by the government to distract us. So those are the things that Tom DeLonge believes.
I think most people believe that we actually landed on the moon. So if that's the government's doing to make us think otherwise, they're really crappy at it.
I know, because that was their point, right? They were the ones that took us to the moon. Okay.
Yeah, it was, like I said, I was initially reading the article where it talks about him and how he was talking to somebody, I forget who it was, on the phone, and they heard a lot of buzzing and stuff, and he was talking about how his phone lines were tapped and how this individual ended up experiencing like these weird dreams and waking up and they were dizzy, and it was some sort of government mind control thing as well.
Okay. All right.
So, I don't know. I really don't know.
Or just a lot of drugs on everybody's part.
Maybe he was just hungover.
Yeah. All right. So, crazy Tom DeLonge. If you want to read more of that article, we'll put the link in the show notes of the podcast, and you can read it to your enjoyment.
Yes.
All right. Another
person. MusicTimes.com was the one with the various musical artists.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So, Brad, you got anything you want to add to that before we move on?
I love Sammy Hagar, but wow.
I've always thought he was a little nutso, in my personal opinion.
And I'm the person that people are going to hate here, but I think that his time on Van Halen was far better than David Lee Roth's.
You know, I'm kind of mixed on that because I like them both. I thought that Sammy Hagar brought more musicianship to the frontman's job. Like, he played guitar on songs, and I thought he harmonized better with the rest of the band than David Lee Roth did.
Agreed.
It's too bad he didn't get along as well with the rest. But you know what? It seems like those guys don't get along with anybody, given the length of time their frontmen last in that band.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie's problem with Sammy is Sammy did solo projects, and he was supposed to be a Van Halen guy.
And
he didn't like sitting on his butt for 2 years before, you know, doing between albums, so he would do his own thing. So
you can't really fault the guy for that, though, for wanting to stay busy.
Well, Eddie Van Halen could.
Well, he could. You know, Eddie could have, like, produced other artists during that time. He could have done, like, a solo project on his own or of his own.
That would have taken away from his drinking time.
All right. On that note, let's move on to story number two. Frank Drake thinks calling up aliens would be quote-unquote silly. Do you guys know who Frank Drake is? I know Anessa probably does.
The name sounds really familiar.
Have you ever heard of the Frank equation? The Drake equation, excuse me.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the equation of figuring out how much, what is it again? Hang on. The guy, he's the one that came up with the equation named after himself.
Oh, okay. Probabilistic argument used to estimate the number of active communicative extraterrestrial civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy.
Boom. Yeah. And he proposed that at the very first meeting of SETI back in the 1960s, the early to mid 1960s. So now he's saying what SETI wants to do by trying to attempt to communicate with aliens is silly and a waste of time. And after reading this and after hearing this, you may agree with him. So as opposed to other worries that we might draw attention to some really, really bad aliens. Drake thinks that actively sending messages out into space just might be a big, boring waste of our resources. He said in a conversation with BoingBoing.net, according to Drake, it would be silly to send messages now. For starters, we won't be able to benefit from such a project for at least 50 to 100 years. Our time, money, and energy would be better spent searching, as sending messages is not efficient. So he wants us to search, not send.
Aren't we doing both, though?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be continuing to search as well, but they're just adding on the whole sending part. So,
well, I kind of think if, and you know, SETI is the whole radio telescope array thing. I'm thinking the amount of time that it takes to basically point the telescopes at an area of the sky and listen, you might as well send out a message. I mean, it's not that much effort to send out a message.
No, there's not much more that you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, if they were doing something separate, like, okay, let's aim it towards here, let's listen, okay, let's move to this other part of the sky, now let's go back and send a message. I mean, it's not like they're adding extra steps. It's, while we're here, let's just send out a signal.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I think they got the system down pretty well, the whole searching thing. Like, the technology is so good now that they can scan a lot more of the sky than they used to be able to. Plus, they have SETI at home where people can actually look at data and help SETI out to try to figure out if we have or heard something. So I don't think it's, like you said, there's not much more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, if they were adding a whole bunch of extra steps, then I could see the issue. But if it's just, well, we're here, we'll go ahead and send out a signal, it's not that big a deal.
And it's not like they're stopping searching. They're going to continue to search. They're going to just send on top of that.
Right.
Yep.
So basically, even if we could get a signal through to one of the civilizations that's likely out there, we'd be wasting a long, or we'd be waiting a long time for an answer that may not come. That's the whole 50 to 100 years. Our message will go out, but it could be at least 50 to 100 years before we will get an answer back. So that's the whole wasting time thing.
And the other thing, too, is we've been sending out signals unknowingly, or at least not intentionally, for quite a while now. So it could be just a matter of a few years before we hear something back.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. Because, see, radio started, in the 1920s, actually sending radio signals out. And TV, correct. TV's only been around for, late 1940s?
Yep.
So we're not even to 100 years yet.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe somebody's going to respond to the Patty Duke show or something.
It's like that. It's like that.
I don't believe that they're identical cousins.
No, it makes me think of Futurama, and there's an episode where it's a season finale or the series finale of Ally McBeal, and the signal gets cut off somehow. I think it has something to do with when Fry got frozen initially, and the broadcast got cut off, and the signal didn't make it to Omicron Persei 8, and the aliens were so upset that they didn't have their resolution, the season finale, and so they came all the way to Earth just to find out what happens. And, of course, you know, Ally McBeal hasn't been on the air for 1,000 years, and so all of the characters have to basically act out the final bits, otherwise the aliens will destroy the planet.
I believe
if
that
they don't
that's,
get their inclusion of Ally McBeal.
I believe this is not the first time we've discussed that episode. In fact,
I'm pretty sure because
it was
Futurama,
probably your.
I mean, come on.
It was probably your pick too.
It probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, that might be the way that we encounter aliens. Like, oh man, what happened to Timmy? Did he fall down a well?
They must. Yeah. They'd be really pissed off about Firefly then. Jesus.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So our conclusion is keep searching and sending.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Third and final news story of the night, of the week, of the episode. Brad, what you bring to the table there?
X-Files. John Podesta regrets not telling us about aliens. Who is John Podesta?
I'd like to know. Inquiring minds would like to know.
As well they should. He was a former White House chief of staff and senior for President Obama. And he says that he regrets not being more transparent about UFOs. Podesta's longtime fascination with UFOs is well documented, and his brief political hiatus following 4 years as President Bill Clinton's chief of staff freed him up to pursue his otherworldly passion. Now, at a 2002 press conference organized by the Coalition for Freedom of Information, Podesta spoke on the importance of disclosing government UFO investigations to the public. And he was quoted as saying, "It's time to find out what the truth really is out there. We ought to do it, really, because it's right. We ought to do it, quite frankly, because the American people can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law." So following a tweet that Podesta put out last Friday, the Washington Post recalled an exchange one of its reporters had with Podesta in 2007. Karen Tumulty had asked Podesta about reports that the Clinton Library in Little Rock, Arkansas, had been bombarded with Freedom of Information Act requests specifically seeking email correspondence to and from the former chief of staff, including terms like X-Files and Area 51. Podesta's response through a spokesperson was, "The truth is out there," the tagline for the TV show The X-Files, of which Podesta was known to be a fan.
Hmm.
And this was on a story not on IO9, oddly enough. It was townhall.com is where I found this story.
No, it seems like an IO9 article.
It really does, and that's why I wanted to make sure I gave a tip of the hat to townhall.com.
I'm starting to see other websites provide cool stories, not just io9.com, which is, that's encouraging, because you don't want to get all your stuff from the same source all the time.
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah. All right, do you
nobody likes a one-trick pony.
Yeah. Do you believe this guy, either of you?
Well, I'm thinking in order to be a chief of staff of any president, you have to go through some forms of evaluation, because you're going to be dealing with some information that's not for the general public.
Okay.
So
can we back up yes. for a second? What does a yes. chief of staff do? What's their job?
To be the chief of the rest of the president's staff?
That makes sense given the title. But I just was wondering about the details, exactly what they're responsible for, who they're in charge of, that kind of thing.
All right. Chief of Staff's role is senior and executive business management for corporate functions which are not aligned with a specific job family. That would be a chief of staff for a business.
Okay.
So they basically oversee like the office-based functions for what happens in the White House.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, it says they manage the president's schedule and decides who is allowed to meet with the president. Because of these duties, the chief of staff has at various times been labeled the gatekeeper or the power behind the throne.
So he's going to be in on a lot of meetings, hearing a lot of things.
Yeah, he's going to know. And, you know, I mean, oh, Mr. President, you have a 9 a.m. appointment with so-and-so about the alien abduction that happened in Eastern California. How do you want to handle that sort of thing? And, you know, I'm sure not everything is just meeting. He's got to at least know some sort of detail about the meeting.
So, the long story short, the guy can't be crazy. I mean, he can't.
No. I mean, he might have gone crazy. Who knows?
After working for Clinton for 8 years?
Well, anything's possible. But beyond that, he loves the X-Files, so it can't be all bad.
Yeah, yeah. No, I believe, no, good point. Very, very good point, Brad.
He has my vote.
So
if
anybody on the White House staff would have information, it'd be this guy would know. So, yeah, I believe him.
Mm-hmm. Or at least he would know the key players who had meetings with him that would probably discuss things like that.
Yeah.
They would have to go through him to talk to the president. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. So our verdict on this, we believe him when he says this stuff.
Yep.
Okay. 80%, yeah.
All right, okay.
At least we're more likely to believe him than some other random Joe.
Than DeLonge.
Now, you, dear listeners, you have a vote in this as well. We would love to hear from you. You can leave us feedback by going to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Well, don't go there. That's the email address. You can go to our website if you want, galacticnetcasts.com. Thank you very much. You know what? We're going to have a shorter version of that soon because we're working on a new website and I have to have two domains to work on the one. So it's going to be it's going to be shorter. It's going to be in the spirit of that, but shorter. So when the time comes that that site goes live, I can actually use that shorter one. Go to galacticnetcasts.com or leave us feedback via a voicemail, which is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. We'd love to hear from you.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
This had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
You know, in case you're ever wondering, are those made-up reports or are those real reports? Those are actually real reports of people calling in or being interviewed on camera about their encounter with UFOs, just to clarify what those...
Cool.
Yeah. I always wondered. Yeah. Now I know.
Yeah.
And
that means it's time for Craft Corner, the famous alien spacecraft in history!
History.
It was Inessa's responsibility to come up with something awesome this week. So what are we going to be talking about?
That's kind of a belated Valentine's Day UFO. It's the heart-shaped UFO.
Aww.
Aww. It's so adorable. Well, the picture that I actually found on the, I think it was the U4th website, looks more like a, I don't know. It's a weird heart if it's a heart.
It's a UFO.
It's
that
more
got...
like a set of lungs to me than a heart, but that's just me.
I was gonna say, is it a UFO that got rear-ended, so it looks like it's a heart now? It's got kind of squashed in the back.
To me, it looks like a set of lungs, and then you've got the bit in between, like your trachea or whatever.
Okay.
Like between the two. But yeah, to me, it looks more like a set of lungs. But anyway, it is a rare craft. It really is. I tried to find more sightings, and I found a few, but it's not nearly as common as, say, the cone UFO or the shape-changing UFO. And there's basically reports of this craft. The first report describes it as a silver heart-shaped craft, and it flew right in front of the person's car. The person goes on to say, "I cannot at this time remember the exact date of the event since it was so long ago. This happened in broad daylight. I thought I was familiar with most aircraft types since I've always been interested in flight, and I spent 3 years in a Navy fighter squadron. This vehicle matched nothing I had seen to date. I thought at first it was a stealth fighter, not having seen one at this time. However, the craft was dull, silver metallic in color, and was shaped similar to a heart with all rounded contours. It had a small rounded nose like a pencil eraser that extended out from where the point of the heart would be. It also appeared to be made of one piece of metal, no windows, no vertical stabilizers, no apparent openings or exhaust ports of any kind. It flew from north to south at approximately 1,000 feet elevation and was about a quarter of a mile away from us. My wife and I both saw this at the same time as the same shape and size. I would say that it was about the size of a small plane, perhaps with a 30-foot wingspan. It left no vapor trail, and I could hear no sound, although I was driving in my vehicle at the time. After about 2 seconds, the trees hid my view of the craft, and by the time I was clear again, it was gone. To this date, I have never seen or heard of any craft, including the now famous stealth jets, that resemble what I and my wife saw that day." And another person describes it as, "Three lights, skull/heart shape. Flew low, made loud noise. My friend and I were camping outside in the backyard in my camping tent," as opposed to any other tent?
Yeah.
"My barbecue tent, where we were talking and heard very low for an aircraft sounding noise. Neither of us knew what it was, so my friend, who is very much into aeronautics, couldn't resist looking at it. He saw it and grabbed me right away. We looked at it for about 15 seconds, too scared to do anything until we came to our senses and ran inside yelling. My dad did not believe us. The UFO had rounded sides and looked like a skull or a heart shape. Also, my friend describes it as an octagon with rounded edges as it goes farther towards the end of the craft. It had three lights in a triangular form, and the tip of the triangle at the front of the ship was the brightest. Goodness. And I tried to find more information about it. Instead, all I got were a few sightings, and a couple of them were in Texas. The first one in Washington, D.C., we've got the object looked like the top of a heart shape and was very large and appeared to make no noise and also had no pattern. And they saw that for about 5 minutes back in 2009. Then the next one, Amarillo, Texas. Shiny heart-shaped object in Amarillo, Texas. Awesome description. Orchard, New York. The view lasted for about 30 to 45 seconds, and it says, three lights, skull / heart shape, flew low, made loud noise. And it kind of makes me think of the other people that did the description for what I just read, the second longer one, where they were camping in their tent.
Yeah.
Just because the skull heart shape thing. But anyway, the next one was Lincoln, approximately 3 miles east of on Highway 193. Is that Nebraska? No.
I know where
California.
That is. Yeah. Okay. I've been there before. It was a gas station
Lincoln,
on the corner.
Lincoln, California, I guess. Other two, silver heart-shaped craft flew left to right in front of my car. So this just kind of passed in front of them. And then the last one, in Denton, Texas in 1975.
Whoa. You lived there.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, I saw that and I got all excited. I'm like, oh, UFO in Denton. Yay. And for those that don't know, that's where I lived for like 8 years. Before moving to Wisconsin.
Sucker.
Yep.
So do you have more details about the Denton?
It says, bright red heart-shaped vehicle flying above treetops mid-afternoon on a clear sunny day. Day. I don't know why day is twice, listed twice.
Because it was that spectacular of a day.
No, they were very excited.
They were excited. It was a day.
It's a day! Woo!
No, today's the day.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was pretty much all I could find on this craft. So, yeah, it seems to be a fairly rare spacecraft or UFO to witness is this heart-shaped craft.
And I'm thinking that we're going to be running out of crafts here soon.
Quite possibly.
Maybe we should transform the craft corner into the sighting of the week.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Can we Although transform we've been and roll also... out? We still have some fictional crafts.
Yeah, we got plenty of fictional crafts. So, you know, just go to that well once in a while and we'll be fine.
Yeah, but I've been trying to find actual sightings of various shapes in the sky. And that was the latest one.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Good job, Anessa. Let's move on to our picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, read, played, eaten. That's a possibility. I may be getting some UFO-themed food from the UK soon. So.
Oh, I forgot about that. I haven't sent.
Yeah, you guys have to get on it. Send Daryl your address, and he'll send you a care package.
I love British treats.
Anywho, this is where we talk about the stuff that we like. And I'm going to start with my pick, which is a book that... my lovely wife, Stephanie, got me for Valentine's Day. I'm holding it up to the camera right here. It's called The Government UFO Files, The Conspiracy of Cover-Up by Kevin D. Randall. And I'm only a couple chapters in, but it's really good stuff. So here's the basic description, courtesy of Goodreads. The government has long collected information and assembled files on unidentified objects and extraterrestrial encounters. And this book, nearly 100 sightings... Or in this book, nearly 100 sightings and other occurrences are thoroughly examined. Suppressed evidence, hidden plots, cover-ups, misleading statements, and documented connections to government intrigue are all addressed. Kevin D. Randall, a former Army intelligence officer, has sifted through hundreds of historical and government documents interviewing multitudes of participants and tracking countless number of leads to present a case for government incompetence and potentially malfeasance. Or malfeasance.
Yeah.
I've never said that word before, so I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Shining a harsh light on the government and its secrets. So some of the chapters covered in this book are the first one, which is Foo Fighters. It's not just a band. It's where they got their name from, the Foo Fighters. They were basically unidentified flying objects during World War II. Project Sign, Saucer, and Grudge. Blue Book. The Belt Montana Minutemen missile crisis, where a UFO hovered above a missile silo and basically shut it down, turned off the power. The Washington UFO sightings of 2002, and the O'Hare and Stevensville sightings. That is Stevensville, Texas, I believe, Vanessa, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's southwest of Fort Worth.
Yeah. So there you go. That's just a few of the chapters in this book, and I'm really, really enjoying it so far. So I'm going to just talk about what I've read, just the initial couple of chapters, which are about the Foo Fighters. And as you know, the Foo Fighters, well, as you maybe don't know, the Foo Fighters are what the U.S. soldiers and airmen gave a nickname to unidentified flying objects during their air patrols of World War II. And it's was actually studied. Like, they got so many reports that the military actually had an early version of, like, Project Blue Book during World War II. They had, like, a couple of guys assigned to kind of track down the witnesses and just basically write down their statements and try to connect the dots, which they actually never did. Some of them were silver, actually solid objects that looked like real craft. Others were lights. Some were very, very small objects. Like in the South Pacific, they seem to have this occurrence where the bombers would be basically they'd be tailed by these Foo Fighters for hundreds of miles. Just they're constantly on their tail, which I'm thinking that maybe it was some kind of weird occurrence with the light, but I wasn't there, so who the hell knows? But really, really interesting. Like, there was a lot more cases of these Foo Fighters than you would think during the war. And there was a couple of occasions where these airplanes lost power. You know, you hear about these UFO cases where somebody's in their car and they lose power in their car, or they lose track of time. That's something that actually happened during some of these Foo Fighters encounters during World War II. So if you're looking for actual factual or historical reading about UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrials and all that stuff, I highly recommend this book. It's called The Government UFO Files, The Conspiracy of Cover-Up by Kevin D. Randall. And that's my pick. It's right here.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds like an interesting book.
Yeah, it's my nightly reading now. Because it's cool because it's not like one, you know, long story. It's a bunch of small, it's, you know, broken down into chapters, and it covers the whole history of the UFO phenomenon beginning way, way back. It's easy to read, easy to digest, so that's one of the reasons why I'm recommending it.
Excellent.
All right, moving on with our picks. Anessa, you are next.
My pick is a video game.
Whoa.
Surprise!
Hold on.
And that video game is Minecraft.
Really?
And for people who aren't familiar with Minecraft, Minecraft is a game about building stuff. You break blocks, you place blocks, you make stuff. And the description from Minecraft.net says, Minecraft is a game about breaking and placing blocks. At first, people built structures to protect against nocturnal monsters. But as the game grew, players worked together to create wonderful, imaginative things. It can also be about adventuring with friends or watching the sunrise over a blocky ocean. It's pretty. Brave players battle terrible things in the Nether, which is more scary than pretty. You can also visit a land of mushrooms if it sounds more like your cup of tea. But anyway, people listening are probably wondering, why is she talking about Minecraft? It doesn't sound like it's related to aliens in any way.
Well, they have zombies. I didn't know they had aliens, though.
They do have zombies, but they've released back in October, and then again, I think the second one was December or January.
December.
They released these packs that you could purchase, and they're Doctor Who themed. And you can play as Doctor Who characters through Minecraft. And so
awesome.
I am a weeping angel trying to make my way in the Minecraft world.
And I'm currently playing a Cyberman.
Wow, that's freaking awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got, Christ, like a bunch of characters from the new Doctor Who and from old Doctor Who. You can be the War Doctor, or, you know, you could be Doctor Number One if you wanted to be. You've got the Weeping Angels, which I've already said I'm playing one.
Daleks.
You've got Daleks. You've got Davros.
They've got Ood.
Yeah, they do have Ood. But they do have, it's Doctor Who Skins Volume 1, and they have a Volume 2. Like I said, they came out with another one just like a month ago, maybe. But it's kind of nerdy. Because when, it's great because Brad's played Minecraft more than I have, I think, at this point, but I finally gave my character pants, and so there's this 8-bit weeping angel with brown leather pants on. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I've actually fashioned iron pants and vest.
So, yeah, if you happen to have Minecraft, I know it's for Xbox 360 that they have these skins for. I'm not sure if they have it for the PC experience. They probably do, or they probably had people that have written code specifically for Doctor Who a long time ago. Because I know with the PC version, a lot of people have come up with various things that they can add to the game. So, but for actual like console players, we finally get Doctor Who as an option, and it's wonderful. So
I recommend
downloading it.
I didn't hear anything about this. This is news to me.
I actually thought about using it as a story a few months ago, but then I saw another story that caught my attention at the time, and then I just never got around to it. And since I've been playing Minecraft a lot more lately, I'm like, I'm going to use that as a pick, because I really love being able to select different things and just have fun with it. I haven't figured out if you can somehow change certain monsters to maybe some Doctor Who characters, because it would be kind of cool to maybe have a zombie be like a Dalek or something, or a creeper.
Weeping Angel.
Yeah. Actually, the creeper would be a great Weeping Angel.
Yep.
The creepers, from my understanding, they came about as a glitch. They were trying to write script for a pig, and it ended up being this creepy green thing, and if it sees you, it'll come after you, and if you hit it, even if it comes after you, if it gets close enough, it'll just explode, and if you hit it, that prompts it to explode. And they're just awful little buggers, because one of them blew a hole in the side of my house, which ended up opening this mine underneath my house, and all these skeletons came and killed me. It was not a good day.
It was ugly.
Now, do you guys play like on a server somewhere, or do you? Is it just
you can play with other players, I believe, or you can just play it on your own. And I've just kind of been playing it on my own lately till I get things more up and running and actually have a house. I had a glitch where I would end up with pigs and chickens and horses inside my house, and zombies and skeletons would spawn.
They just show up.
And yeah, I had one for quite a while. I think I named him
Chop.
Chop. Yeah, I called him Chop. Pork Chop. But finally he abandoned ship. And yeah, I just had a bunch of farm animals, which wasn't so bad. But then I had skeletons and zombies like popping up in my house when I would get home. And they're not really supposed to be in your house.
No.
Not without tearing down the door.
Yeah.
And that was problematic. So I had to redo things. And
did you call?
I think I finally fixed it.
Did you call the Minecraft Exterminator service?
No, I went out and mined a bunch of cobblestone and redid that entire floor in cobblestone, and that seems to have fixed it for now, at least. I haven't had any issues.
All right, good stuff.
Anyway,
all right, thanks.
Minecraft. If you can download the Doctor Who, and I think I think they might have like a Mass Effect 3 skin.
Yes.
So if people are into that, that's another game that has aliens in it as well.
Oh, neat. Okay. Yep. Cool. All right. Final pick of the week, Brad. Bring up the rear, buddy. That wasn't supposed to be at all. It's the traditional way of saying it, or the meaning for it.
Gotcha. I'm just the pervert here. All right. I was just kind of bumbling about the internet, as one does, and I found something very interesting. Joe R. Lansdale is a very, very interesting writer. He's written a lot of things that are like strange tales based. And by strange tales, I mean supernatural or alien or things of that nature. But they happen, he lives in the Southwest. So all of his stories take place in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. And he actually wrote Jonah Hex for DC Comics, DC Vertigo, wrote a few miniseries. And he also wrote the movie Bubba Hotep, which starred Bruce Campbell and Ozzie Davis.
I've been wanting to see that.
I own it.
Sweet.
Surprise.
You know, that's funny. It's funny.
Every episode, I own that. Sweet.
Yeah. And yeah, you find out something that Brad has that you didn't know. You're like, yes.
This massive DVD library I have. It's ridiculous. So he writes these stories, and he doesn't write just comics. He writes novels, novellas, short stories, and things like that. And a group of people got together and actually did a short film adaptation of a story that he wrote called Bar Talk. Now, in Bar Talk, and there's going to be a link to the actually found it on io9. You'll be able to see the video. It's 8 minutes long, so it's very short, doesn't take much time at all to watch, but it's well worth it. And it takes place in a bar, I believe it's in Texas. And you know, this guy sits down to have a beer, and this weird dude in a white dress shirt, like pristine white dress shirt, comes up, and he starts talking kind of crazy to this guy, who has little to no interest in who this guy is at all. And he starts telling him a story about how he's a spy for Mars. And you're left going, wow, this guy is really off. You know, there's something wrong with this guy. And as the story progresses, things change. And in that 8 minutes, you find out something very chilling and very interesting. So, Bar Talk, a short film, like I said, it's 8 minutes long. You'll be able to get the link to it in the show notes. And God, Joe R. Lansdale, if you enjoy tales of the supernatural, tales of extraterrestrial nature, definitely look up Joe R. Lansdale. He's an excellent, excellent writer, and I believe that you would enjoy his stuff.
All right, so kind of a double pick from Brad, sort of.
Sort of. You know, this particular thing, which is based on something he wrote, but you should check out his other work, too.
Yeah.
It's quite spectacular.
Yeah, enjoy the source material, as they say.
Yes.
As I say. I don't know if they say, but I say.
Oh, they say it.
Okay.
I've heard them. They say it.
Who is them?
Who is they?
Yeah.
They are them.
Will we ever find out?
No.
No. All right, that's going to do it for the Alien Invasion. Thank you for listening. You can find us by going to alieninvasion.galacticnetcasts.com. You can watch our episodes at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. Search for us on iTunes, and if you like what you hear, please leave us 5 stars and a positive review. We're also on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You know, the best ways for us to grow as a show and get more people listening is you telling people about us and leaving us positive reviews on iTunes. So that's the most important thing that you can do. If you like us, that's your way of giving us a high five or whatever. You can leave us feedback by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Leave a message or a text message. And we did have a voicemail from Jason in Kansas,
Can I interrupt just one second?
Yeah.
I'm going to let you finish, but...
Okay, Kanye.
No, I'm going to let you finish, but this podcast is the best podcast of all time. Wait, what? Sorry, go ahead, sweetie.
Two things. One, let us know. We just changed the audio setup here, and we want to know, does it sound better? Does it sound worse?
I'm going to vote it sounds better.
And I'm guessing that it does, because when you spend that kind of money for equipment, you hope to God it does something, and hopefully for the better. So people can let us know about that. And two, Ines and I have been doing a bit more crockpot cooking, and we are interested in getting more crockpot recipes. And this doesn't have to do anything with aliens, but you know, if anybody's got like a really cool crockpot recipe that they recommend, please send it our way, because we'd really, really looking to expand our horizons on what we do with the crockpot.
Yeah, because last week was the zucchini soup, I think, and then this week we had chili made with beef and chorizo.
So yeah, I mean, even if it's not alien related, maybe give it an alien name and then send it to us, you know?
Out of this world chili.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
So yeah, galacticnetcast@gmail.com or tweet us, Facebook us, or circle us on Google Plus and share your recipes that way as well. All right, so Jason's going to have to wait till next week. I didn't load up his voicemail in the soundboard, so sorry about that, Jason, but we'll get to you. That's going to do it. Final thoughts, of course. Brad, was that yours?
Yeah, I guess I played mine a little early, but yes, that is my final thought.
Okay, so that leaves Anessa.
I like sitting at my own computer again.
Yes, now we're in the same room doing the podcast together, and timing-wise, when we speak, we can actually look at each other and kind of get cues as to when we're done talking, and so we're not talking over each other, which is kind of nice.
So what's next? A new podcast from the two of you?
Well, the adventure party, which I've been talking about doing, is now that I've got the setup done here, going to start working on making that happen here.
Have you tried recording audio with your new setup?
I did. I've got Adobe Audition, and I did do that, but I had the echo issue that we had talked about earlier, which is now fixed. I know what happened. This mixing board has an effect capability, and I had it, when I was reading through the manual, it's like set everything to basically 50%. And start, working through stuff there. So the effect was turned on at 50%, and that's why it was echoing so heavy. So once I turned it all the way down to zero, problem solved.
All right. Okay. Okay, that's going to do it again for this edition of the Alien Invasion. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye, Dave.
Bye.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.GalacticNetcasts.com.